Of course he's right. Just ask him. He'll tell you. Here's Steve.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evil.
All right. Well, joining me now is Myron Ebel. He directs the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's also an opinion editor at The Hill. It's time to drill, baby drill, says Myron. Myron, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
So it's time to continue the energy renaissance. Keep the momentum, you say.
Yes. President Trump made a number of promises during the campaign to reverse President Obama's agenda to reduce American energy production and use, and he's making good on that promise across the board, and most recently in opening up offshore areas for oil drilling.
I want to ask you something here, a little bit off topic, just a bit, but I was reading an article yesterday about how half of the cars in America might be electric by the year 2040, okay? And I read that, and so I see the North American International Auto Show, and they have a lot of electric vehicles there. But then I also see that the northeastern United States, New England and so forth, during this cold spell a couple of weeks ago, were almost a brownout situation because they didn't have enough energy, right? They have planned so poorly that they're starving for energy. They have energy problems, and yet they're going to have all these cars on the grid. How will that work?
Well, that's way beyond me. I don't know, especially since in the winter when it's cold, electric batteries have much less charge in them. They don't go nearly as far.
And you need to charge more.
Yes, you need a lot more electricity to run an electric car in the winter than you do in the summer.
Well, the reason I ask you this, I'm reflecting on Obama's war on energy, which is what it was. Obama committed a war on American energy. We're trying to go the other way. But at the same time, you have people in that part of the country that don't want any pipelines or power plants or anything else. They're all going to be sitting in there in the dark with their electric car that isn't charged.
Yes. Well, I think, what President Trump has done is President Obama's agenda was to force the heartland states that use a lot of energy because they have a lot of manufacturing, which uses a lot of energy. He was forcing them to adopt the policies of California and New York and New England. And President Trump has said, no, we're going to let those states that use a lot of energy use even more energy and produce even more energy. But as you know, New York and New England and California are still on the Obama agenda, which is we're going to squeeze energy production and use, we're going to raise energy prices, and we're going to get off fossil fuels and start using windmills and solar panels. And we're even going to get off nuclear power, too, by the way.
Except that we don't want any windmills off from Martha's Vineyard or Cape Cod or any place that we actually have to look at them. We're going to hide windmills somewhere else, apparently.
Well, where wealthy people don't have to look
at. Exactly. Where the elitists can sit there with their electric bicycle and not have to see the windmill. I got it, but it doesn't make it. It's short-sighted. And I'm with you. I think that, you know, the energy renaissance continues in the heartland, be it Michigan or Indiana or Ohio or wherever, and it's going to continue. We're producing more oil, more natural gas, and if they don't want to use the energy, we're happy to use it over here.
Well, that's right, and I think you see that those economies are declining. I mean, people are moving out of, not only because of high taxes, but because of poor economic prospects. People are moving out of New York, Connecticut, California, Illinois, the states that have pursued this this squeeze on energy. And, you know, the fact is that all of this energy production, particularly natural gas and our vast coal reserves, gives the United States a huge energy price advantage over other countries in terms of manufacturing. And so, man, you're seeing a rush of companies to move back to the United States and build new factories here. So this is this is good news for the United States on both sides, both the production side and the consumption side.
Yeah. All right. So as you look forward then, and you see the opportunity to more offshore drilling, for example, comes to mind, although it was taken back off the table for parts of Florida, and the opening up of other areas of the country for fracking, for drilling, for all of these things. Where does that fit in, do you think, in the long-term economy of this country? I mean, obviously, it's moving America into a possibly a net exporter, and that would be huge, wouldn't it?
Yes. I mean, you know, the United States has had huge trade deficits. That is, we import more than we export for decades. And a large part of that deficit is caused by our imports of oil to run our cars, to make gasoline and diesel. Now, what's happened is that because of the shale gas, oil and gas revolution, fracking, we now have vast reserves of oil and natural gas. And so the United States, despite the attempts of the Obama administration to put the brakes on, I mean, production on federal land out west has been going down, but on private land, oil and gas production has skyrocketed. The United States is now the world's number one oil and gas producer, and that's only going to go up. So we will become a major exporter of oil and gas, and probably coal too, although coal is very cheap, so you don't make a lot of money off of it. That will really help our trade balance, and it will make the United States, it will change the geopolitical balance as well, because Russia will have less control over Europe through natural gas, and Saudi Arabia and OPEC will have less control over oil prices.
So what we need to find, Myron, Myron Ebel here from the conservative, Competitive Enterprise Institute is what I meant to say. What we need to figure out is liquefied natural gas. This is how we really take over providing Europe with all of its energy needs and really handcuff the Russians. We need to find a better way to deliver. You think that's a fair thing to say?
Well, yeah. I mean, liquefied natural gas is a major product throughout the world. They liquefy it and put it on tankers and send it to another country and then unliquefy it and turn it back into gas. It's expensive. It's much better to have a pipeline and much safer, of course, to have a pipeline. But if we want to export gas to Asia and Europe, we're going to have to have more liquefied natural gas terminals. Now, the fact is that those terminals back in the early 2000s, they were building terminals to import liquefied natural gas because we were running out of it. But after the shale oil and gas revolution, we're now turning those terminals around. So instead of receiving it, they're exporting it. So a lot is going on in that field, and a lot is also going on in the chemical industry using natural gas. So it's just fantastic news for the United States, but it's also good news for the world.
Yeah, it is good news, and despite all the hysteria from the left about global climate change, disruption, warming, whatever they say, the fact of the matter is, energy is important. Energy creates refrigeration and warmth and information and power, and it just goes on and on and on, and we need more of it, not less. I'll give you the last word, Myron.
You're absolutely right, Steve. We need more energy, not less. The world is not energy rich, it's energy poor. Over a billion people in India, for example, and parts of Asia and Africa still don't have access to electricity. Think about that.
No electricity, yeah. Myron, I'm going to leave it there for today. Greatly appreciate it. Myron Ebel, Director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Always good to have you here, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, quick break. We'll be right back with Phil Kirpin from the American Commitment.